Let me tell you how I know that prayer is an important issue for us to talk about in this congregation. Because every time I preach on something that remotely glances on the subject of prayer, someone or another gets mad at me. You know it. That's how I know it's important. And frankly, that's how I know we probably ought to talk about it again. Because it's a living controversy for us. It is a wound or a hope or an uncertain struggle because it's something we have not gotten figured out yet. And thus, it's probably a very honest conversation that we have not yet completed with each other. Now, most of us know, deep down in our bones, that there are plenty of reasons for religious liberals, gay folks, persons of all kinds of dubious distinctions, which we proudly bear, there are all sorts of reasons for people like us to avoid subjects like prayer. Chief among them, the fact that when many people say, "I'll pray for you," to a Unitarian Universalist, they're very often really saying something akin to, "I will quietly judge you with the imprimatur of my God, who, by the way, will also judge you." And we would really rather not be on the receiving end of such prayers. Or, for that matter, dish them out ever, under any circumstances, under pain of death, ever pray any such prayer to anyone else. Add the fact that many of us are unsure who or what we might be praying to should we undertake such an enterprise in the first place, and you begin to see why it's controversial. It is a difficult subject, which is why every time I stand up here and talk about prayer, somebody gets mad or at least mildly annoyed. But the crazy and sacred thing is, that usually I agree with the people who are mad at me. And usually we sit down and listen to one another and come away from the conversation deepened in a way we could not have planned and wouldn't have dared to expect. I know that we need to talk about prayer in our congregation because the subject generates conversations that are deeper than, "Hey, good sermon." And that has to count for something. After all, if we come here only to hear things we agree with, to further entrench ourselves in long-held opinions and pick at the scabs of our theological wounds, if there is no room for creative discomfort and the beauty of honest dialogue, then what are we doing here? Running away from difficult or complicated subjects is easy. But re-examining something with thought and depth, even just to reject it again in the end measure, that is hard. And we should strive to be safe enough here that we can do hard things in this sanctuary when we would dare not do the same elsewhere. So, as I was psyching myself up to preach about prayer again, because after all, controversy is not my favorite thing, as I was psyching myself up for this sermon, I had a look back at all the sermons I have preached on or around the subject of prayer over the years, of which there have been maybe a half dozen. And in reading those through, I had this little aha moment, this realization, which is that over the years, in intentionally raising our anxiety over this particular issue, I have presented you with something of a theology of prayer, or perhaps just a series of theories about prayer, which have actually been fairly consistent over time. Reading those sermons, I found myself agreeing with myself. I am, in general, nicely comfortable with the theory of prayer I have advanced over the years. All of the things I have had to say about prayer seemed pretty nice when I read them again. which is how I knew it was time to rethink the whole darn thing and pick another fight. And this time I have chosen to pick a fight with myself, which should be interesting. Today, I want to tell you in a nutshell what I have believed and preached about prayer, what you've heard from this pulpit over the last 6.5 years, 6.5 years, and what has been shaped by these enriching conversations that we've had once all the singing and the hoopla of Sunday morning is done and we dive into those rich discussions we should always welcome. After I finish telling you that, then I'd like to tell you the ideas which are shaking up everything I have shared and preached and debated about over the years, the ideas that make me uncomfortable. And finally, by the end of this sermon, I suspect I will do little more than leave you there in the confusion without answers. In the creative and contentious midst of a subject too important to put down, I apologize in advance. So to the first task, articulating the theology of prayer that I've been preaching over these years, here is what I think I know about prayer, or have known, that if you yearn to do it, or hear it, or speak it, or be a part of it, you should not beat your rational, intellectual self up for the impulse. Perhaps you should just give in to the impulse, and perhaps giving in will be a spiritual gift that will nurture your life. No one should have to pray. No one should feel forced or compelled against their will, but neither should those who yearn to pray feel bad about it, or like they've somehow abandoned their rationalist principles or compromised their proud religious liberalism. You would think that prayer, or the need for it, wouldn't be something church folk would feel bad about. But this is not an ordinary collection of church folk. And I cannot tell you how many times rational, intellectual, atheist, and agnostic brewers, some of you among them, have been in my office to confess the shocking and to them embarrassing little truth that when they are afraid or overjoyed or feel like giving up, the words of ancient prayers they thought they had forgotten long ago creep up and across their lips, and you know what? It helps. It's something to do when there's nothing to be done. It's a balm to the weary soul, and there's nothing quite like the 23rd Psalm in the dark of the night, when, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil. Those words land like silver rain on a darkened heart, and they can patch up some tiny pieces of what is broken. And there is no sense feeling bad about that. I cannot tell you how many times I have attended to people, so many of you and your family members among them, people at the deathbed or the moment of grief or the time when the most honest and difficult decision must be made, not later, but right now. And that person who may or may not believe in God has looked over at me with questioning eyes and asked me to pray with them. I always say yes. And even when I have no words, the words come, and it is a holy thing that leaves me just a little mystified. So I know this about prayer. If you yearn for it, go for it, and the words will come. Don't be ashamed, don't worry about the details, and don't back away just because you're not sure who you're praying to. Which leads handily into another thing I think I know about prayer. Or maybe thought I knew about prayer, that it doesn't matter who you're praying to. Or even if you believe your prayers are heard, what matters, I have always said, is not to whom you pray, but what you pray for. Prayer, I believe, is very often a speaking forth of our ideals. It is a way of naming what we want the world to be. It is a statement of our heartfelt intentions. Whether it's God who answers those prayers or some combination of our own effort and the grace of the universe, around us, there is something about stating one's intentions that makes them rather more likely to come true. Prayer is the naming of our great hopes. It is the speaking of our deepest hurts. It is the calling out of true things so that at the very least we ourselves might hear them and be changed by them, or at least be grateful or less afraid. It is the poetry of the soul, our hopes and dreams and fears and failures put into words and lifted up like so many burnt offerings on the altar of humanity. People all over the world pray out their heartfelt desires, knowing that the greatest power of prayer has always been the transformation of the one who prays. As Soren Kierkegaard said, prayer does not change God. It changes the one who offers it. And so we ask God, or the universe, or the beautiful void from which we spring, for all that we yearn to realize, for protection from our fears, for peace, for comfort, knowing that ultimately we are asking ourselves to pick up the implications of our prayers and to make them real in this world. Of course, sometimes we confuse God with a genie in a bottle and make our three magic wishes. Sometimes we confuse God with Santa Claus and pray for stuff. And sometimes, both here and everywhere, people confuse God with a commanding general and pray for victory over their enemies and vengeance for those who oppose them. But even these misguided and, dare I say it, idolatrous prayers have a way of changing the one who offers them. Any way you slice it, what you pray for shapes you, and that is a power not to be trifled with. It is thus important to tend carefully to what exactly we pray for. As I have said before, it matters what we pray for. When we pray for war, sooner or later war will come. And when we pray for wholeness, sooner or later it becomes impossible to kill another person. Prayer does in this way have power, and it is a power that should be wielded responsibly. Those are the things I think I know about prayer. That those of us who yearn for it should not be ashamed, and that prayer has the power to change us through the speaking of our greatest hopes and our highest intentions. That's what I have been preaching about prayer for 6.5 years. And in a nutshell, I think it's a pretty decent UU conception of prayer. At least it's not totally terrible. In that, it's not directly referential to a supernatural deity. It acknowledges the power of spiritual practice, and it is honest in its expression of the lived experience of grieving and dying and beginning again. On the whole, I still pretty much buy it. And you can count on me in just about any setting to come up with a perfectly appropriate, perhaps even inspirational, and always honest prayer that holds to those basic concepts. I am good at naming what groups of people yearn for. I am good at speaking aloud our fears, and I am grateful for the chance to both wail out my sorrow and sing forth my praise. This is, for me, well within my comfort zone. But here's where it gets interesting. Here's where I pick a fight with myself. With a quote from W.H. Auden, who wrote the following words that will not stop sticking in my craw. To pray, he said, is to pay attention to something other than oneself. Whenever a person so concentrates his attention that he completely forgets his own ego and desires, he is praying. Get that? To pray is to pay attention to something other than oneself. To pray is to let go of one's own ego and desires. To pray is to concentrate one's attention not within but elsewhere. To pray is not to speak, but to listen. And yet for years, I have been telling you that prayer is fundamentally an expression of the innermost state of the one who prays. Prayer is the speaking aloud of our deepest yearning. Prayer is a poetic vocalization of my grief, of your hope, of our joy. It is an offering we make, a process of paying attention to what we want, an invitation to have our will be done, even if we are the only ones who ever hear. See where I'm going with this? Me, we, our, my, us. This thing I have been preaching to you, this thing I actually do believe, is awfully selfish, isn't it? It's a whole lot of talking and not much listening. What would it take to stop asking the universe to help me have the strength to realize what I want and start asking all that is holy what it demands of me? What would it take to stop telling God all about my internal state and instead ask God what she wants me to be? To pay attention not just to the truth as I see it, but the truth as I ought to see it. For the world, or God, or one another, something that is not you and is not me has a right to expect something of us, doesn't it? We make plenty of demands on God. Shouldn't God have some demands to make of us? To be better than we are? To be gentler? Quieter? Less bossy? To be bendable to the will of some force that is not just me or you or even us, but that which holds us in the palm of her hand? What does morality ask of us? What does life ask of us? What does God ask of us? Or even more simply, what does morality say? What does life say? What does God say? Even when our own hopes and desires and dreams are entirely out of the picture. The very definition of Islam is submission. Submission to the will of Allah, submission to something greater than oneself, and I can tell you that I am not ready to submit to much of anything. It is not a word I am particularly comfortable with. Rather, I want the world and all of its suffering to submit to the sheer force of my will, that it be better, that we be healed, that the people I love don't have to suffer anymore. But what of the forces which are greater than myself, and what of the ways in which I function, we function, to hurt the world rather than to heal it? Ought not we sometimes listen rather than speak? Ought not we sometimes be transformed rather than seek to transform? These things I believe about prayer, that one who yearns for it should go for it, and that it does not alter God but changes the one who offers it. And maybe, though I am not ready to submit, I am wondering if honest prayer should also include a time for listening rather than talking, for receiving rather than pouring forth. And I am not good at that. You tell me to pray the voice of the people, to speak the truth as I know it, to name our heartbreaks and our joys, and though it is a task that is daunting enough, I am in. That is the kind of prayer that I've been talking about for years, and it is important work I do every day. But you tell me to stop talking and hear the voice of all that is holy demanding something from me, asking me to change in ways I would rather not be changed. And all of a sudden, I am in the midst of some creative discomfort. And maybe that's why W.H. Auden's words are important, because I'm not done sorting them out yet. To pray, he said, is to pay attention to something other than oneself. Whenever a person so concentrates her attention that she completely forgets her own ego and desires, she is praying. I don't know today who the other is that I should be paying attention to. I don't know where desires go when you set them free. I don't know how to live outside of my own ego, but then again, I am not enlightened yet, and chances are neither are you. So I don't have the answers today. Frankly, I'm not even sure I agree with myself. I will simply say this, that there comes a time for listening. And for me, perhaps that time starts right about now.